So it's an interview with Mr. Bob Barkin on 27th of July 2011. Bob's going to give us a few recollections on what he can remember about James Oak Park Yard.
So, well, I'm going to tell you, I started there, I left school at Christmas 1934, and I started there just before the new year, 35. So anything before 34, there'll only be
what you
such as people have been, told. I mean, it'd be true, obviously, but I couldn't. I mean, I didn't witness it, nor.
Yeah, that's fair.
But as I say, before 1934, to the best of my knowledge, I reckon that the pipe yard had been going roughly 50 years. The pipe side, the brick side, had been going longer than that. The bricks were earlier. And of course, they provided the material and what have you for building pipe yard. Mm. Sheds and kilns and chimneys and.
Did different sorts of bricks, did they?
Well, they did. I've only seen them. I've seen the machine when I was there, as I say, at 14. I started in blacksmith shop for a 12-month and then they moved me. But in that 12-month, that were right on the brickyard. The brick blacksmith shop were on brickyard. The bricks that they made then were pretty well all common brick. Later they started to make an engineering brick, but before then, and the machine was still there, was what they used to call wire cuts. And wire cuts weren't pressed. Wire cuts were like were made in a mould, on a machine obviously, but in a mould and sliced off, what they call wire cuts, that's just purely and simply what they were.
Yeah.
And so of course when they were finished and fired, they'd be a complete oblong block, rough, in rough, whereas a common brick and an engineering brick were all pressed. The common brick, they were pressed once, and on an engineering brick they were pressed twice. Now when to deal with the blacksmiths, just for one period, we had to build a pressure frame sort of thing, so that they could test the strength of an engineering brick. I can remember it to this day. It was £13,000 a square inch.
Righty, that's a lot.
The engineering brick, and of course that's what the, I don't know what the specification was, but that cleared it anyway. But as I say, I had very little to do. We'd got a chap used to come in into blacksmith's shop, and he were a fitter for the brick machines. There were two brick machines. He used to come in and fit the plates. You know, the plates used to wear out very quickly, and they were cast steel plates. But nevertheless, that's what happened. Then they'd got Riddings stamped on one side. So of course, when they were pressed, you got the frog of the brick on either side, and you've got in one at Frog, you've got Riddings printed.
That's how Riddings come on. I've seen Riddings of them on.
As I say, that were brickyard. They were at the time in 34, up till 35. They'd got what they used to call clamp kilns. They'd got another kiln called the Osmond, and that were a continuous kill, and then they got clamp kills. Well, they used to hold, I don't know who, it must have been a good few thousand bricks, must have been, I should say, probably 30 or 40,000 bricks a clamp kill. And all the way, they were an ordinary kill with fire holes all round for fire kill. But the reason they called them clamp kills was with it being so long, they used to put railway lines, sink them into the ground, roll the way down the kill. I should say it'd be something like, I would say something like what? The length of my greenhouse down to ass perhaps a bit more than that.
About 40 odd footish then, and something like that.
And they'd be, they'd go up till 7'6", something like that. Mm. And they'd be perhaps, what shall we say, 1, 2, 3, perhaps 5 yards wide. And then these railway lines, they used to have a hole in the top. They were sunk into ground in concrete, ran up the sides of the kill, and then there were a big bolt went across, and that stopped them from bursting open, sort of thing. Whereas in a normal kill, the what you'd call the round kills,
that was in like dome top.
With a dome, there were dome top on that. But of course, it was a long kill. But on the pike kills, that's a dome top, and of course they were round, perfectly round, the kills. The difference was with them, and we used to do it in blacksmiths, and that used to band them with ordinary, they'd be about 4x3/8 steel bands, and then you used to fasten them with a bolt, them bands, and then you had a kill wicket for getting in and out, like with your barrow and so on, and then you clamped them onto the sides of that. And that's how that were the two differences. They both worked on a chimney pulling hot air and what have you, fire around. But on the difference with the continuous kill, that was done by dampers. And that was on all the time. They fired so many kills, perhaps, I don't know, I think they might, it was quite a small one that was, I should say, probably about perhaps 14 chambers. And they were all done by damper, and a much taller chimney to pull it all the way around. And then they did it simply by lifting dampers up, dropping them down, and they'd get, the bricks used to go in green as soon as they'd come off at press, straight into kill, but for 2-3 days, probably 4 days, there wouldn't be any fire on them, but only hot air coming around all the kills.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then they'd only be fired after that 14, I'm going to guess 14, they used to be fired from the top, and they're only fired with a copper dustpan. They only used to slive it down, little holes down there.
Right.
And of course, when they set them to allow for little apertures, like chimneys, if you like.
Did they to stand on top then, to stoke them?
They stood, but that was only Osman.
Right.
Only Osman.
Yeah.
But the others, them that were fired with fire holes, because they were much, much dearer. Much dearer to run, for the simple reason that your hot air simply went and got lost in atmosphere. Whereas in Osman, you used all your hot air to keep drying your bricks. And that was the difference of the two. As I say, out of the 14 kills, there might have been 3 on fire. They used to fire, they'd gradually bring it up until your kill previous to the one that you were firing would be still be red hot, and of course the draft were coming through, and it had warmed the bricks up, the kill up, to a point where you could start dropping coal down as it fire. And then that one would bring it in, it would go round and round all the while. Now in later years they pulled that down and they had a bigger one. It was a firm from Stoke that built that, and that was 18, but the chambers were far bigger. And I should say there'd be some. Each chamber had hold maybe 25,000-30,000 bricks,
Christ.
Something like that.
That's a lot, isn't it?
And then they were exactly the same thing, but the chimney was 150 foot. No, I was 5 yards, 150 foot that was. The same firm built the chimney and all that. And in blacksmiths, we had to band it on top. And as our lad, because that were a highlighter job, we went up on lift.
Okay.
It used to be a little steam engine. When they started to get started to climb a bit, like in building chimney. There were thousands of bricks went in bottom. Oh, it was massive thick walls and what have you. And that had got, it had only got the one damper that had for the chimney, and the pull of that chimney, you wouldn't believe. It would soak you down if you weren't careful, like.
Yeah.
And but as I say, when as a kid, 14-year-old, that was one of the jobs as we had to do, and we had to put the band round the top of the chimney when it 150 foot up.
We went up there, did you?
And we went up, and it were a little steam engine. There was a chap on it all while they were building. There were mortar and bricks and, well, all they wanted went up there. And it must have gone up the outside. They were pulling out bottom. The little engine stood several yards away from chimney. And then they got this wire rope, went on a pulley from bottom of chimney, and they kept moving it on planks with another pulley on them planks, and that went by the centre of chimney, and then it lifted this here. It was only a crude.
Crude. Air easing.
Oh, only like a little platform.
Did it bother you?
And that's what we went up on.
Did it bother you? Did it bother you?
No, absolutely gobsmacked, you know, because it was finished, the chimney was finished when we went up. But the actual, all we had to do, and I think maybe they could have done it without us, really, but we made the band round that, because it was a square chimney. Now, in recent years, you may have seen, especially on these heritage programs, they've got that chimney as a round chimney, not in a photograph, but it was square, and that was square, and the one they built at the pit, which were built within a couple of years or so, and that was, as I say, 180 foot, that were a round chimney, and they got wrong, and it was something that's come in our paper recently. And Archer wrote up and told them, corrected them, but anyway, I didn't.
Well, they were known there anyway, wouldn't they?
Well, it's a square chimney. It was a square chimney anyway. And of course, the reason, as I know, was because we made the band for it. And it was made by probably about a 5 by 1/2 inch steel, and each corner was held by bolts angle iron. But all we had to do, they got the scaffold around the inside, and we had to, and they made me have a go and all that, because I was only say I was 14. We had to kneel on this scaffolding and lean over like that. And all we did, there were three on us out at blacksmiths, and then their steeplejack, they did the fastening up of the bolts on, and all we leaned over to take the weight of this thing while it tightened it up, because you could see forevermore. That were a highlight at Brickyard. But as I say, that was 19, that'd be 1934, because I came away 35. They sent me to join us. Anyway, then I had to go to into joiners, stick chopping mostly, because they got a bloke chopping sticks. I used to do 14 bags a week.
What did you do with them then, Bob? What did you do with them? Use them for?
Not us, they were only gaffers. That were gaffers to take on. They were Dyke Searson, there was Les Searson, our son. Fred Dean had a son called Fred. They were gaffer. Bill Edwards. Who else did we? Oh, there were several officers, elevated status, as you might say.
Yeah.
But about 14 bags a week.
Right.
It took some doing because I had to find wood.
Yeah.
I had to go down to Clayhole and fetch and try and get sleeper, anything that came along. it was stored, we stored it in a joiner shop, yeah. Dried it off and then they had to cut it. I wasn't allowed to use saw, of course, not in them days. I was allowed to use the blinding axe and it was about £4 then.
Yeah.
It's about 4 ton, but that was my job in there for me. It didn't take all my week and I wasn't sorry finishing up. But it relieved a bloke who he'd be at least 24 and he was a fully fledged joiner. And he used to do these sticks until I went.
Crikey.
But which was stupid, but anyhow, they proved a good friend to me, same as foreman joiner. But I stayed there until a year. The war had broke out. No, had it? No. They were calling people up, the reservists and trades that they didn't think were any of any importance. The young men were being called up for national service 6 months before war broke out.
Oh.
So that's when I had to go back into blacksmiths for the simple reason that the blacksmith striker, they were married with three children. A chap named George Dudman. Blacksmith was Jack Ward, by the way. George Dudman, obviously, didn't want to join up, and they thought he might get called up. So, he went to Pitt.
Yeah.
And that's when they fetched me back from joiners. I'd had from 35 to 39, beginning, it's just right, be around about July time, 39. I had to go back. I was fully fledged striking then, mate.
Oh.
That was striking hammer that we were in till then.
Yeah, did you ever miss?
I could tell you a little tale about that. The striking end, there were a lot to do, because you made the one of the main jobs in there. We did all these earrings and so on for kills and all that, but that were only like once in a blue moon. But they used to make rings for the dyes on a pipe machine. And our pipe machine was same as a brick, for the simple reason that your clay would wear out anything that was in contact with it quicker than what you'd ever dream. And even the rollers that you ground the clay up with, you'd be amazed how they hollowed out. And they'd be 2 inch thick to start with, cast steel, and that was another little job we had to do.
Oh.
We'll put them, it was like putting a band round a cartwheel, only these bands were probably 2 ton, perhaps even more.
Crikey.
So they had to be done on the floor.
Oh.
They did. The queer little episode with them was, You didn't shrink them on, same as you would a band on a cartwheel, anything like that. But it was done on the floor, you had to lay them flat. And they filled them full, your roller itself probably be about 2 inches, perhaps not quite 2 inches. Might have been inch and half less in diameter than your rim.
Yeah.
And that gap was made up with iron filings. You filled it with iron filings, that gap.
Yeah.
Oh. So it took quite a lot to do it. And then you had to wet them. And they did that by undoing your fly holes and about a couple of dozen on you. Even that, because it rusted them, rusted them quicker than that was done just the same on Brickyard, because they ground the clay up just the same with them, and that's how they used to put them on. Finishing up, they decided that there'd be a better method than that, and that was long after I'd left blacksmiths. They bought them in thirds, a third of them, and then they had like tapered. There'd be a tapered hole in your rim, and then a bolt that were made to fit that taper, and then they used to fasten them on like that. But that were after I left. But that's how, that was method as we used, like.
Yeah.
rather crude, but still it were effective.
Well, they
never felt they never come off.
No. Probably practices were better in them days on some things, but
there were some things. I'll tell you what. When you took your old one off, because they were certainly worn badly, and he used to cut them off with oxyacetylene cutter. He couldn't cut downwards for the simple reason that they'd have damaged the roller itself. So he had to cut it, and we used to use one acetylene bottle and two oxygen bottles. It was a special gauge that he'd got that would take the pipes. But anyway, and it'd go underwater, that would. I'm not saying it'd cut a lot underwater. It wouldn't like that. Yeah. Type of thing, but nevertheless, it wouldn't go out underwater. When he cut it through the width of the roller, which would be probably best part of 12 inch, 11 to 12 inch, and he had to cut it the whole 12 inch through, so you can imagine what heat there was, and when it come off, it would spring, you had to be as careful as. There's nobody were about at all. It'd spring open. That's how that iron filings used to really put pressure on it. But that was that then.
How many weight did Fitty's shop?
I joined up front blacksmiths when I had to go this year, and that was one of the biggest jobs we did were blackouts, because. We used to have an observation post in Derby. I think it were on Rolls Royce, because that was the most important.
Yeah.
And they had an observation point that they could spot any glow in the sky. And of course, pipe kills and brick kills.
Yeah.
They were, as soon as they shovel in to feed up. I mean, they were daylight, more or less. And they used to tell you from Derby when they could see it.
Oh.
And it was obviously an indictable offence to cause any. These glows would give them a good guide where to go, any road. So I tell you, that was the biggest job that we did. We had to practically live at work doing them all, because there's anything like. There'd probably be 20 odd kills, 11 fire holes on a kill, and every time you had to do them, it was that number. They had to make. We made all sorts of things, dust things as you hooked on.
Whether you leave them outside at all and then hang it on when.
That's right. As soon as they were allowed this, then they just took the coal on and bang that on again. But they were nothing really worked properly until. And I had nothing to do with that. Joiners, they fetched the joiners, and they had to build like a very, very light shelter. And it's probably about something like this shed and half its width, so as they could shift and then put it straight back.
Yeah.
And that's what I think they finished up with. But they were all. There wasn't a lot of activity on yard during war, but anyway, they just kept going.
They worked 24 hours a day during war then, Bob?
Oh, they worked it, they have to do, because of firing a kill, you see. It's always, it was never continental shifts or like that, as regards, it was only the firemen that had the 24 hours, because obviously had nights and.
I suppose you wouldn't get shift pay in them days, would you?
Oh, no, I'll tell you another thing. There were no overtime pay. You didn't get any overtime. We were working, I bet, 70, 80 hours a week.
Crikey, that's a lot.
Oh, it was. Well, half seven, half eight were commonplace. That were in blacksmiths at that time, doing these blackouts. As I say, they were not. The overtime pay, I don't know whether it came on during the war. Because our ordinary week, were 50 hours for all pipe yard, all pipe and bricks were 50 hours. You did five nines and one, about five shifts at nine and then five at Saturday. And that were your regular week. But over that, you still got no extra money. It were.
Did you swap around on shifts, then do nights and then days, or did you stop on the same shift?
No, they moved round. Brickyard, they had a foreman on that because they fetched him from away. I think he came from Stoke when they built this new kiln, and he were always on days. He were on 7 days a week, yeah. He used to bike it from Ease.
Good Lord.
And then on Saturday, it were at 6 o'clock, like, he used to come 6 till 2.
Yeah.
Then bike it on, but it was 7 days a week. Mm. But they brought, I don't think it didn't start off at double pay, not for Sundays, but it, I think we started off at 1.25 for overtime, and 1.5 for Sundays. Then it increased to 1.5 normal time and then double time for Sundays.
Yeah.
Of course, firemen, we've been on a regular pattern of 5 out of 7, if you might look at it. But they got so much an hour, and that went all the way through on all the hours that they worked,
yeah.
But they didn't get any extra for Saturday afternoon and Sunday.
Yeah.
Finishing up, they did. They paid them a bit extra, but when I finished up, when I'm getting on, mind you, I'm jumping my tail there. I went into, when I come out at war, front war, we were a bit late in RAF, being demobbed. I was in India at the time when they were demobbing them, and we were very late. I didn't get out until May 1946, and I went back in to join a shop. I stayed there until back end of 49. I came out, I went in Kilgang. I started, I abandoned my trade and I went into production side. That were.
That more money?
Well, it was more money per hour.
Yeah.
Quite a lot more money per hour. But by the time you'd lost all your overtime, because we're always on overtime.
Yeah.
On maintenance. Yeah. Saturdays and Sundays, like. But nevertheless, I lost quite a bit for a start, and then gradually it built up, and we used to go helping brickies and all sorts at weekend. Uh-huh. I'm bugger for overtime all my life.
Yeah.
But it was hard work at Kilgang. Yeah. I should say one of the hardest jobs you could ever imagine.
What's that, loading and unloading?
That were putting white hard pipes into kiln and taking them out when they were burnt.
And had to manhandle everything.
Everything was manhandled.
Yeah.
And you see my finger.
Yeah.
That were done, not so much up this way, that one as well, but by picking, simply shoving your hand down a pipe, mostly a 4-inch pipe, because 4-inch pipes were the general thing for sewage from each house into a bigger, when say multiple houses would have a bigger, perhaps 6 inch, then 9 inch, and we went up to 15-18 inch pipes. That's what they made.
So being that,
we used to get paid by the ton in Kilgang, and we used to get 4 and 7 when I first went in 49, we got 4 and 7 pence farthing a ton for them.
Crikey.
For them. And out of that, there were 5 men, there were 4 wheelers and 1 setter. And your setter got, I should say, roughly 25% more than your wheeler. And I think it worked out, 4 and 7 pence farthing. The setter got 1 and a penny farthing, and other 4 on us shared rest. Mm. So that'd be what? 3 and 6, wouldn't it? Mm. That's right.
What did setter do then, Bob?
Well, the setter, now there's a bloke at Jacksdale, if ever you get a chance to talk to him, he was a setter. He was later on admitted, but still he was setter for quite a few years.
Yeah.
That was Peter Robinson.
Oh.
Now, a setter, you'd use to keep your kill, that was the biggest job, was keeping your kill straight, because if you didn't, your pipes would be, I should say, a big proportion would be what they call seconds. because it started to lean when you got, they were in almost, when you're on full fire, when you kill on full fire, they're almost in a semi-molten state. You could see them in the kiln, but if they went over at all, and it were common when they went over, but they'd be slightly bent, and you couldn't sell them as best pipes.
Yeah.
If you couldn't put a tube, it was a tube. That was when they used to have you'd pay more for tested pipes, but to test a pipe, that's what they did. They had to put a steel tube down that just only a slight clearance.
Yeah.
From your, and it, any bend would have stopped it going down. And
you check everyone then that come out.
Only if it were tested, but you could see you'd got people. When we, as a kill gang, drew a kill, we used to take them out onto stacking ground, or if they were good, you'd very often pull them straight on lorry. If you were selling well, but you could. It was like something that. Came to you with a bit of experience. I mean, you'd spot them if they were, you know, if they weren't the good. And also, you had a little tap. We used to tap them to get them out because they'd stick together. Mm. Used to have, you'd put sand, scatter a bit of sand on the floor and on your sockets and things like that. But they'd still stick. And when we used to draw them, We used to have a hammer, but it would have got a round head about like inch and a quarter head, something like that. And we used to tap them, and that'd loosen them.
Oh.
That's all they needed. But if they'd gone over, if they leaned over like that, it was a hell of a job to get them out.
Yeah.
They'd all, because it was the salt glaze that did it. The salt glaze, that's what they had to bring them up to that tremendous heat for.
Yeah.
And then they'd, I think they used to fire them probably about twice or three times with salt when they're at this tremendous heat, and that used to put that glaze on. But they're the pipes that, if ever you see any today, well, you won't do, because they stopped them from doing it for the simple reason that the salt when they put it on made such a terrible when it used to wet stuff laying, especially they used to catch it all because it used to prevailing wind would blow from Codner Park end and blow there, and it never used to rise above a foot from ground, and it used to climb up and wash in. That was it when they were glazing. But they made a damn good pipe.
Yeah.
But it was banned, and that was it. They went back. They went on to that was used yet. It was really like a crude sort of oil. You know, it was way down.
Yeah.
Down list of oils, but for all that.